So inspiring. We're blessed every week by our choir. Thank you. Paul mentioned the trip meeting for tomorrow night. The reason we don't know where we're going is because we don't know where we're going. The group has to meet and decide, but we'll do a biblical-based trip or an early Christianity trip. Italy is on the list, as well as Greece and Turkey. Also, next week, we'll be having UCC 101 for anyone who is interested in thinking about joining the church. It'll be in the basement conference room straight under this sanctuary, and it'll be following church. I hear the deacons are cooking, and several of them have told me what they're bringing. And so it's good food. Even if you don't want to join the church, come on down and eat wonderful food and learn more about us. Also, tomorrow is the grief group at 2 o'clock in the office conference room. Today is the second in a series on leadership. Last week, I gave you a lot of philosophical things to think about for leadership, and today I want to continue that, only give some more practical application. So Thursday morning, I walked into Fellowship Hall, right over here, and found six women in our church making blankets and little baby jackets for infants in Honduras. Months ahead of time, Grace Neal shops for fabric on sale, and she begins cutting out and ironing the edges for the blankets and the jackets. And then others pin very carefully the edges while others sew seams, and then Wanda Nicholas takes home some of the jackets and makes a finished blanket stitch around them in color to add a little bit of jazz to them. And by next week, they will have made 40 receiving blankets and 40 jackets to go to maternity hospitals in Honduras. So I asked them, why are you here? What makes you care about infants in Honduras? And the overwhelming, humbling response was, we're meeting a need. For some mothers, these are the only things they have for their babies. Another said, imagine having a child and not knowing what you are going to put the child in to take it home. And another said, my grandchildren have never lacked for love and all the necessities. Any blankets that I make for my grandchildren are just for sentimental reasons. But the blankets we're making today for these babies in Honduras are a necessity, and we are making them to do our part to help fill a need. Well, Barbara McKee is another person. She travels to Honduras regularly to help people there with everything from good health to education. And she even creates her own little books with coloring pages, but they're educational, they're in Spanish, and they help families with activities, but also with health, finding healthier habits. This is a fabulous example of good leaders. Well, as I began to think about them, I thought about spirit-filled leadership. It's a perfect example of what we can all do to make a difference in our world. And we need more spirit-filled leaders. As our text for today says, for you are called to freedom, brothers and sisters, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love, become slaves to one another. 2 weeks ago, I noticed that John Caraway was here early in the morning, several days in a row, and he was outside in a hat, trimming trees and bushes around the church. Now, I happen to know that outside work is not John's favorite thing. He prefers the indoor maintenance that he so often does around the church. And so I knew it was a labor of love for him to spend the day in the heat doing yard work, but he did, probably because he loves this church so much. And as I look around the room, I could mention many, many names of each of you when I'm talking about the spirit-filled leaders of our church who offer time and energy to make even a small difference in the world. One of our members knows that seminary is expensive and that Paul is footing his own bill along with the NAACC. He pays for his gas to Tulsa, his books, his tuition, and other costs. And this generous person has twice gifted Paul with money to help with those expenses, knowing that our church benefits directly from his work at seminary and what he is learning. And then Maxine and George Morrison volunteer at Wesley Hospital and at the Ronald McDonald House. And Maxine was recently awarded for 30 years of service there. Amazing. But this sermon really isn't for the purpose of patting ourselves on the back, because I want to give some examples so that we are all motivated to get up and to do even more. The need is great. And there are things that even the oldest and the least mobile of us can still do. Here are some examples. Our hygiene pantry needs your plastic shopping bags to fill for those who come by and need hygiene products, toothbrushes, detergent, and soap. And you can just drop them in Fellowship Hall. That takes almost no work, just picking up a plastic bag and bringing it in. It gets recycled twice over. The Wichita Children's Home needs $5 gift cards for fast food and for Quick Trip to help the children in their care. The American Red Cross can use your blood donations. Rescue agencies for animals can use food bowls, food, cat litter, and other donations. And many charities advertise that they actually could use a ream of copy paper. How hard is that? Honestly, the list is endless. And so if you have a heart for helping others, there are thousands of ways to reach out. True leaders exhibit this generosity of spirit, even in corporate settings. For example, Starbucks is known for its exceptional treatment of its employees. They even offer health care for part-time workers. But even more poignant than that is the story about when three of their employees were killed in a bungled robbery in the Washington, D.C. area store. And true leadership was demonstrated by Starbucks CEO. Instead of taking a moment and having a press release or calling his legal counsel, Howard Schultz flew straight to Washington, D.C., and he spent an entire week with the employees and their families in the area. Schultz's passion and incredible leadership helped to heal those who were most affected by this tragedy. And that is an example of spirit-filled leadership, even on a corporate level. Well, for many of us, it may seem kind of counterintuitive to think that we can lead better by serving those in need. But let's take a look at the true essence of many traditional leadership roles as examples of that truth. In any war, there are generals and there are soldiers. And the generals lead the soldiers, but they serve the people that they wish to liberate or to save. A great surgeon can certainly be a leader in the medical community by using her skills to serve the needs of her patients, if and when she puts her own needs first ahead of her patients. She no longer leads. And that's not to say that we should never consider our own needs, of course. They are, after all, needs as opposed to wants. But we can, however, serve our own needs by serving the needs of others. In fact, some of our most compelling emotional needs, like significance or contribution or growth and even love, are actually met for us when we serve others. Bill Crawford was certainly an unimpressive figure, one you could easily overlook, especially during a hectic day at the U.S. Air Force Academy. Mr. Crawford, in the late 1970s, was the squadron janitor. Now, while the cadets were busy around themselves, preparing for academic exams and athletic events and Saturday morning parades and room inspections or never-ending leadership classes, Bill, the janitor, quietly moved around the squadron While he was mopping and buffing floors and emptying trash cans and cleaning toilets and just tidying up the mess that 100 college-age kids can leave in a dormitory. For many years, no one gave Bill much notice. Why? Well, perhaps it was because of the way he did his job. He just kept the squadron area clean. Even the toilets and the showers gleamed. And frankly, he did his job so well that no one had to notice or get involved. Maybe it was also his physical appearance that made him disappear kind of into the background. Bill didn't move very quickly, and in fact, you could say he kind of shuffled a little bit as if he had suffered some sort of injury. And then his gray hair and his wrinkled face made him appear older, perhaps, to a young group of cadets. And then he had a little crooked smile. It looked a little bit funny. But for whatever reason, Bill blended kind of back into the woodwork and became just a fixture around the squadron. The Academy, one of our nation's premier leadership laboratories, it kept busy from dawn to dusk, and Mr. Crawford, Bill, well, he was just a janitor. But that changed one fall Saturday afternoon in 1976. One of the cadets was reading a book about World War II and the tough Allied group campaign in Italy when he stumbled across an incredible story. On September 13th, 1943, a private, William Crawford from Colorado, who was assigned to the 36th Infantry Division, had been involved in some bloody fighting on Hill 424 near Altavilla, Italy. The words on the page leapt out to this young cadet. It said, "In the face of intense and overwhelming hostile fire, with no regard for personal safety on his own initiative, Private Crawford single-handedly attacked fortified enemy positions. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of life above and beyond the call of duty, the President of the United States." "Holy cow," thought the cadet. "You're not going to believe this, but I think our janitor is a Medal of Honor winner." Well, they all knew Mr. Crawford was a World War II vet, but they had no idea he was decorated. And they couldn't wait to ask him about the story. They showed him the page from the book with anticipation, but also a little doubt on their faces. And he stared at it for a moment, and then he quietly uttered something like, "Yeah, that's me." Both cadets were stuttering. "Why didn't you ever tell us about this?" And Mr. Crawford replied after a little bit of thought, "It was one day in my life, and it happened a long time ago." However, after the brief exchange between them, things were never the same around the squadron. And the rest of the story is that on Hill 424, Private Crawford took out three enemy machine guns before darkness fell and halted the platoon's advance. He could not be found afterward and was assumed dead. So the request for his Medal of Honor was quickly approved. And then Terry Allen presented the posthumous Medal of Honor to his father, to Bill Crawford's father, George. But 2 months after that, it was learned that Private Crawford was alive in a POW camp in Germany. And during his captivity, a German guard clubbed him with his rifle. Bill overpowered him, took his rifle away, and beat the guard unconscious. And a German doctor's testimony saved him from punishment, perhaps even death, in the POW camp. To stay ahead of the advancing Russian army, the prisoners were marched, including Private Crawford, 500 miles in 52 days in the middle of the German winter, and all they had to eat was one potato a day. The Allied tank column liberated the camp in the spring of 1945, and Private Crawford took his first hot shower in 18 months on Veterans Day. Private Crawford stayed in the Army before he retired as a master sergeant and then became a janitor. Well, if you have a heart for helping others, there are thousands of ways to reach out. And I would suggest that true leaders exhibit this kind of generosity of spirit, and they serve the needs of others wherever they see them. I urge you, as your minister and as a friend, to find that ministry that you can have, that service role, that gift of time or self, and then to offer it freely. Even those who don't think they can have a ministry in this world. And the world and the church need us, especially those who are spirit-filled leaders who will offer what we have for the sake of others. I urge you to think on this ministry this week and what you might do to reach out and serve those around you. Amen. Our closing hymn is in the bulletin, and as you're able, I would invite you to stand and let's sing together.